Exactly what's going on today. On one of my devices, I see 10 people in here, and on my other, I see 4. So, gonna give this a few minutes to hopefully iron out. We'll get the rest of the 42 team in here, and then we'll get going. Hey, Nena, there you are. Shot you a co-host invite. If that's a little buggy, let me know, and I'll just shoot a speaker one. And Trev, get you up here as well. Let's see, go. Okay, Twitter's moving slow today, but it does seem to be working. Then I see you up here as co-host. Now we got Trev on stage. Awesome. How's the mic sound? Can we get a mic test?
It's good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sounding good. How are you doing, Trevor?
Everything's stellar, dude. Shit's moving.
That's what we like to hear.
Cool stuff going on out there.
I'm gonna shoot Dan a ping or two. I'm not sure where he's at. He might be having connection troubles, but let me figure that out real quick. And if so, we can maybe get started without him. But give me 2 seconds. Okay, Daniel should be joining soon. I know we are capped on time for this episode, though, so let's maybe make the most of it. Nena, do you think we should kind of get a start while we wait, rather than wait for him to join? He seems fine with that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, cool. Trevor has to introduce himself because nobody here knows him. So
exactly. Cool. Okay. So quick brief intro and primer. Welcome everybody to episode 14 of The Answer. Weekly spaces brought to you by 42, where we explore pretty much all aspects of what it means to be in Web3, how Web3 is evolving. Similar to the core 42 product itself, which is sort of an aggregation of many different things in Web3 and an attempt at simplifying and bringing everything together, just like we try and do in these spaces every week. So this week we have Trevor from the Dora Hacks team here, and I'll let him give himself a little intro. I think what they do is super interesting, and there's Daniel. Cool. Let me shoot Daniel an invite, and Trev, you take it away.
Yeah, I guess I can just jump straight in. If you're in Cosmos, you probably know or for at least heard of Dora Hacks. I'm Trevor from the Dora Hacks team. We're one of the industry leaders in hackathons, developer initiatives, that kind of thing. We serve kind of as like a public goods. We're positioned kind of as a public good where we support all ecosystems. We're relatively agnostic or agnostic in nature. And our whole thing is about building and funding the frontier. You know, we want to support good projects. We want to support incredible founders. So we do everything from hackathons. We do some venture stuff. We do some grants. We also secure a vast majority of the ecosystem in Cosmos as well as beyond Cosmos, and just kind of serve as a support layer. And we got a lot of stuff going on. And yeah, that's kind of just a brief overview of us.
Awesome. And what's your particular role there?
That's a good question.
Little undefined.
things. Yeah, every BD partnerships, launched our live event series with one of our colleagues, you know. We all do a lot of stuff. The team is super engaged. And you know, there are a bunch of killers on the team in the best possible way. You know, it's a very talented team and happy to be a part of it. So everybody kind of touches everything.
Did Dora Hacks start with a Cosmos-centric focus, or did it sort of grow into it?
So the Dora Hacks actually started, I think we started as like in-person hackathons and then kind of grew from there, you know. Cool. Team's been around for 8-9 years. It's a global team, 120, 130,000 plus developers in the community, again, around the world, mostly in Web3, although we've been exploring more frontier tech options out there. Like, I was just out at MIT for the new space age convention with like the NASA administrator and like Lockheed, the probably the JPL and Boeing people out there too, Northrop. We're also exploring space, which is a cool thing, but like that's not our focus. We're all about frontier tech.
Gotcha. Very cool. Okay, so I think one of the most interesting things for me about Dora Hacks, and I'd love for Nen and Daniel to weigh in here too, is that although you're very heavily invested and involved with Cosmos, you do go beyond that, which gives you guys, I think, a sort of interesting perspective on Cosmos. So sort of open-ended question, but what is it about building in Cosmos, doing anything in Cosmos, whether it's you guys building something, running a hackathon, finding projects to support or integrate with, how does it compare and contrast to other Web3 ecosystems? Because Cosmos is definitely a bit unique compared to pretty much anything else. Just the fact that Cosmos implies multiple blockchains, where that's not the case elsewhere. So what's been your sort of experience and how it differs?
I think that the landscape is constantly changing, right? Prior to the last like year or so, maybe even the last 6 months, app chains were kind of exclusively, when you said app chain, it was almost exclusively tied to Cosmos, maybe Avalanche with their subnets, right? But, you know, since, you know, we have the Cosmos SDK, you can launch L1s fairly easily compared to most other chains and stacks, and also your own app chains. There's been a massive influx of app chains and L1s using the SDK and adjacent technologies in Cosmos. But as we know, Cosmos tends to start the, you know, the tech trends, right? It's why everybody wants IBC now, some variation of IBC or integrating with IBC, right? We kind of start the avalanche in terms of new ways of thinking. And then it kind of, you know, ripples out from us. So that's why you see Solana, SVM type stuff. It's why we see like Eigenlayer AVSs, which are kind of app chainy, Avalanche subnets, some L3 kind of stuff looks similar. You know, yeah. It's kind of like everybody kind of is now understanding that you launch on a general purpose chain if you're a smaller application. And the second you outgrow your general application or your general layer one, you launch your own app chain, whatever that might look like, whatever ecosystem that happens to be. So you can have control over how your app chain or chain interacts with your application and your users. So I think that we're moving towards app chains. That's why we launched this last year. We launched App Chain Day in Denver. That was a wild success. It was oversubscribed by a massive amount. If there wasn't a snowstorm, we would have had a problem with too many people showing up. You know, so it proved the kind of our thesis that we're headed towards app chains in a very broad sense, right? It's why DYDX is a good example, and people will use that as a good example of them needing their own chain, right? Needing to be able to control the parameters, how it's built, how it interacts, and, you know, drive that, you know, for UX. And you guys are big on UX, right? Got to be able to control that stuff. So I think we're headed towards app chains. That's why we've put a lot of our, if not all of our backing towards the app chain thesis. And Daniel has a question. I'm guessing
that's, I have a question. Dan,
you too.
What's up, Trev? Welcome. Thanks for being on today with us. I do have a question. Why do you think app chains are? I mean, you mentioned now just like having essentially the evolution of an apps into app chains. Why do you think that is the case? And why do you think it will continue to be the case? And I guess the sub question here is like, obviously, I think you're pretty familiar with 4D2 as a team, and maybe I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but do you think that we as 4D2 should be as the sort of aggregation layer is what we're like looking at, or this UX aggregation layer, should we be looking at deploying an app chain at some point in the future?
I think that that's somewhat of a loaded question, because it depends. Do you need an app chain? Yes or no? I can't really answer that question for you, right? Usually, when I think about why you would move from a general purpose like L1, like ETH, or like Polygon general L2, it's because you want to not just kind of tailor how your blockchain is built for the user experience desired by your users, whether that's you want faster transactions, whether you need bigger blocks, smaller blocks, it kind of depends, because like if you think about you deploying a general purpose blockchain, like you're subject to their governance and their community and their BS, right? It's hard enough to rein in your own community in like one siloed community with one stack, with, you know, it's hard enough to do that. Now you're subject to everybody's BS, right? You're subject to if that validator set, right? You lose control is the problem. And when you get big enough, little things make a big difference when it comes to how your chain is designed and the way in which your chain evolves. And if you have to deal with outside constituents, that's a problem, right? So that's kind of how I think about it.
Nice.
I don't know.
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, I like the way that I also kind of view app chains is it's a way to natively have a token utility at the end of the day, which is sort of a big thing that I see. It's like all of a sudden you have this built-in token economy, which can be hard to find if you are just an app. Obviously, it's not impossible to find, but I guess from a regulation perspective, it's more justifiable if you're an app chain, is my understanding at least. And that's one of the key reasons, I think.
I somewhat feel that two categories of app chain are kind of going to emerge, and they somewhat already have. Probably a third and fourth as well. But what I've seen so far is there's app chains like DYDX, let's say, that are wholly their own sovereign, self-contained thing, you know, app chain, in that they are a chain for one purpose. But then you have things like, there actually isn't a ton of good examples of the second type yet, but a decent one would be something like Stride. It's not a perfect example because it's actually pretty large and massive. But in that, I think the concept of app chains and the concept of L2s, rollups, shared security, like in the AEZ, these things are going to mesh together well. So that sometimes, even building right off what Trevor said, where, you know, if you're a small project, you might start as a dApp on a chain and then eventually evolve to an app chain. I kind of think there's two levels to that, right? If you're only medium size yet, it might not make sense to start your own truly sovereign app chain, but maybe to start one that is renting security from a larger chain, whether you're using maybe Babylon to get security from Bitcoin, you join the AEZ for replicated security from the hub, or you do something like a rollup or L2, something like that. And there's probably still fluidity between those. You know, something could grow from having shared security to being its own sovereign thing over time. But I think it's something I've thought about. I don't know if anyone has thoughts on that, but I think there's, when we talk about app chains, there's quite a diverse range in what that can mean, right? Like DYDX is a monster, whereas I feel like we're going to see a lot of smaller things pop up that are renting security from somewhere else, whether it's through any of the methods I've mentioned so far. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's the beauty of app chains, though, right? The flexibility.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's completely fluid. And I mean, the reason we are building what we're building here once again is we believe that a lot of the underlying infrastructure, i.e., the app chain or the chain which provides the execution for any transactions, users obviously won't know what's going on there. So it's like, I guess that's like another step to look at is like, if we at 4D2 do decide to roll an app out an app chain, like what are the benefits of it for our users at the end of the day? Do our users care, or are transactions being executed on efficiently regardless of whether 42 deploys their own app chain? And that's something that we're always thinking about. It's like, how do we bring this industry to be an efficiently operating industry, not just 42 building tech for the sake of building tech? And I guess that's like a balance that we're always trying to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to need help with that. You're going to need two clicks to anything with OB, assuming they're executing on that. You're going to need one or two click onboarding with no KYC under a certain threshold outside the US with Kado. You're going to need to be able to pay for gas in any token on any chain, especially in Cosmos. You're going to need to do one or two click swaps or you know, interactions on another chain from a different chain with ICA and ICQ, right? You're going to need to do a lot of these things, and then you're going to need actual practical application. That means you need cross-chain savings apps plugged into Nolus or other things that are, you know, stablecoin driven, and you're going to need an inflow of non-crypto native people using these applications and understanding them without needing to understand, you know, what a bridge is, you know, what Cosmos even is. They need to be able to use their hard-earned money in a way that's better for them than the current mechanisms that are available for them in that country, right? So we need all that stuff. And we're not that far away, but UX is a choice, and we've been fumbling the ball, quite frankly, just as an industry. Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, I mean, also funny that you say that, because a lot of those things, we have them and we've been trying to like actually implement that, like just what you were saying, the Kado thing, and actually getting to users that are not even in crypto in general, but that are just going to see the application of these and the utility of Cosmos in general. Part of that is why, like right now, I'm in Colombia trying to figure out like what is it that the users here need and what is their perception of Cosmos, and like how can we get a little bit closer to what they need so that we actually can onboard a new wave of users that don't need to have a lot of technical knowledge in order to actually make use of this technology, which was at the beginning the purpose why we were building DeFi at the end. No,
I just think we don't put enough. Here are our gaps. Let me back up. We don't as builders. And you can see this outside looking in. I don't need to build one myself, although I've worked on plenty. We don't put enough focus on the user. We've talked about this, especially in regards to 42. Like, who's your ideal customer profile? Who are they? Where do they live? How old are they? How many siblings do they have? What the hell do they eat for dinner? Where do they hang out on the weekend? Right? An application and tech, whatever it is, without marketing is nothing. If people don't know about it, it's nothing, right? So we don't put enough of a premium and enough of a focus on understanding our users and building for them. We build what we want. Like, that's okay initially, and we raise and we pitch on that. But we, at the end of the day, we need to understand who our user is. Otherwise, no one's going to use the freaking thing, right? Or you're going to get beat out by somebody who understands that from Web 2 because they're coming. Right. So we need to get a little bit serious here and put more of a focus on the user, understanding them, building a product for them, and also the business component, which is putting more money into the business and marketing side of things, because it doesn't matter what you build unless people know about it and it works really well and solves a problem.
Yes, I agree with that. I think two points on that, which sort of jumped to mind there. One thing that I saw today, which was kind of interesting, was Facebook in the early days, someone made it, I don't know if anyone else saw it today on Twitter, but someone posted like 10 things he learned about working at Facebook in the early days. And Zuckerberg said something along the lines of, you are not allowed to refer to users as users. They are people, which I thought was pretty interesting. It's like, we say these users, but like it's actually a human on the other side. And like, how do we start thinking about that human on the other side, not just a user of the app? So I think that's pretty interesting. And then I think another thing that jumped to mind, Trev, on your points there is what I think has been historically difficult in crypto is the anonymousness of users in the industry. It's like, I think a lot of users obviously don't like to know, they don't like to publish anything about where they live, who they are, and like, I think with more regulation, there's more clarity around that and around KYC, etc. But, and I think the industry is heading more in that direction. Although there will obviously be troves of crypto and blockchain and Web3 that are still completely anonymous, but yeah, I think that's historically been a challenge. Like, how do you actually find out about your users, considering these users are mostly completely anonymous?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say that the short answer is like your current users are not your actual users. You know, this is like your very, very short term, you know, pre-PMF, pre-launch of like hardcore GTM stuff. And like, this is, you're testing it out right now against people that are native to DeFi and native to crypto, right? Those aren't your users. Your users, if you're building a mainstream application, are the average dumbass, you know? So, yeah. You know?
Yeah. And then there's that's when you define like the tiers of users that you have. As Trev says, like if we go right now, we're looking for traders, for example, and for that we're going to look for the users of Osmosis and Kujira, for example. If we're talking about like Cosmos specifically. But then if you start building up to what you want to look for, then you start to see that okay, maybe if my focus is users, then I have to go to where this tech is needed. And then in order to meet the users, you have to go to them. So that's, for example, why Vitalik, for example, spent like 2 months in Argentina just trying to understand the users there and how they were interacting with crypto. And we are starting to see much more of that a little bit. So like me coming here, and then also having like diverse teams, no? Because that's something great in our team, for example, that we have people from Brazil, we have people from Colombia, we have people from Argentina, we have people from Europe, we have people from South Africa, from the US. So that allows us to have a much bigger spectrum of what is happening around the world, what are the needs. And just by having that, you get closer to the reality of what your users can be.
Sure. And that's a good point. Go to where the users are and understand them. And that's honestly, like, people think that like that's it. And it's not. The next step is kind of applying like localization to that region, right? Like, I remember like I was at like Tencent headquarters up in US in Palo Alto, I think. And like, I met with Nico Partners. This is a little while back last year, and they're in charge of like deep data analytics and insights for all of the gaming companies. Every major gaming company uses them. And you know, I got a chance to talk to them and ask them some questions. And when it comes to like localization, in this is specifically for gaming, by the way. That's why I mentioned Tencent. That building an application or a game out here in the U.S. or even LATAM, wherever. If you deploy it in a way that isn't like sensitive to the area, like you could piss a lot of people off. As an example, between like China and Taiwan and other places that are very, you know, there's a lot of conflict. Like they couldn't even publish a game that had maps in it or the word map because people would get pissed because the word map made them think about their region because there's conflict, right? So there's a lot of very little things the second you get to being a larger application with a larger user base that you have to think about beyond just who the user is. It's also like their culture, the colors they like. Like, it's really insane, but like little things make a big difference, and that can be the difference between you and a competitor winning.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something that is much closer even to us, and it was during Cosmoverse Colombia when we were having it like 2 years ago. I had to talk with different teams because what they were using for their marketing was not good. Like, they were trying to get like all the narcos, all the cartels in t-shirts so that they would give it away, because that's what they thought about when they thought about Colombia. I was like, if you do that, you're going to offend people in Colombia. Like, if someone sees a white dude using a t-shirt of that, like, they are going to get pissed off. Like, you are not going to be really like attracting users or being nice with the culture in general. So that those are things that you have to have in mind. And sometimes it's, we just miss it. Like, we just don't think that far.
We have to build backwards. If you're not building backwards, then you're, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Timmy.
No. Please finish your thought. By all means.
That's it. We have to build backwards from the user. You don't build product and then talk to the user.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, I wonder if a large reason why this problem is so common is because, without thinking about it too much, like, the two largest cryptos, ETH and Bitcoin, do absolutely none of that. There is no placating to any region. There aren't even like something like a game within it that could have the word map, right? So, like, at that level of size and decentralization, actually, a little bit on the contrary of what we've been talking about, I think crypto is the thing that subverts that, that says, I don't care where you live, I don't care what your background and situation is, here's what I have to offer. But what a lot of teams, I think, don't think of, it subconsciously they might think of that, but not realize, oh, wait, my project is not Bitcoin. It is not Ethereum. It is A, not that large and decentralized. B, it is also not that, like, generalized, right? Like, Bitcoin is not going to defend anyone because there's no, or offend anyone because there's no person behind it. There's no spokesperson. There's no one doing it. It just exists as a thing, which is not the case for the vast, vast majority of crypto projects. So I think potentially a reason many projects have fallen in this sort of trap is, without thinking about it too much, they think of crypto in a general big picture sense. Like, when we first started having this convo, I almost wanted to play devil's advocate and disagree and be like, I think the entire point of crypto is that it can, you know, overcome and subvert those backgrounds and your situation, your environment, that sort of thing. But that's only at the highest level of the biggest, like, most generalized tech that's fully decentralized. For any DApp that has a team and a face behind it and, like, branding and a product, you do need to consider this stuff, absolutely. And I haven't really thought about it like this till now. So, A, just thank you for bringing it up. It's a really interesting thought.
Yeah, no problem. And honestly, like thinking about it from a, it's honestly kind of right on both sides, right? Building without borders, freedom, decentralization, yada, yada. You know, we all kind of believe that in those kinds of core ethos and ideas in some way, shape, or form, varying colors and intensities. That's why we're here, right? But, you know, it's at the end of the day, we're just a bunch of dumb animals. You know, we need to stop trying to think about, like, oh, we've changed so much. We react to the same stimulus we've always have. We get jazzed when the number goes up. We're a little bit degenerate. We like to feel good. We like people to know, to care about what we build. We like to use applications that align with our beliefs. We like to know what that, you know, if it's a, you know, a polarizing figure in an ecosystem, we like to rally around people that believe the same things we do. We react to the same stimuli that we always have. And we need to stop thinking about it that we're somehow evolved or different or better. We haven't changed. And we need to stop trying to change. What is it? I'm all about building a better wheel. I'm fine with that. But thinking about the human as a different animal, we haven't changed. So learn from Web 2. They did it already. They screwed away billions of dollars. Like, look at what they did, you know?
Yeah,
we haven't changed. That's my short of it.
Very well put. Okay, I do want to move on, unless Daniel or Nena want to add anything else on that topic.
Oh, I can talk about that for days.
Yeah. So move on. I know we have somewhat limited time in this space, right, Daniel? You have to leave a little early, though. So I think
I've got to jump in like 3-5 minutes or 7 minutes.
We'll move it along. Trev, I know that Dora has a governance proposal that's live right now on chain. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
That's a fun one, isn't it? Governance
always.
It's very important to participate in governance. So if you haven't voted, definitely go check out 917 that's out there. It's a GovProp spend proposal for the hub. And we're requesting 80,000 Atom. And we're not taking a single Atom of that. And Alliance DAO is also donating $200,000 on top of that. So we will have around $1 million plus in funds, and we're going to disperse that over the course of 2 years. And we're going to foot the bill on operational cost, gas cost, everything from our team. And we're effectively bringing quadratic funding and voting to a much broader audience, which is you're going to be able to vote, contribute, and decide where these funds go, which projects they go to fund within Cosmos. That specifically benefit the hub and the Atom economic zone. So that'll be over 2 years. We'll probably land at about 10 rounds of this, but we've already done quadratic funding and voting for like Archway, Injective, Aptos, and a myriad of other ecosystems via our quadratic funding technology that's deployed on Dora Voda, which is like a governance specific app chain in Cosmos. With anti-collusion infrastructure in place, so also anonymous voting, and it's ungameable. So far as we've tested it, and that's something that Vitalik has pushed pretty heavily: anti-collusion infrastructure, and we've integrated that and built that on our chain. So that'll be over the next 2 years, assuming it passes. I'm not going to count my chickens before I have my chickens. but I think we're at like 30 something percent of the 40% quorum. Everything is a yes except for I think one no. but definitely go check it out, get engaged. I'm gonna be honest, I'd like you to vote yes if you care about it, but if you vote no or you abstain, I'm fine with that too, because governance is important. So no matter what,
I would add, if you vote no, you should leave reasoning somewhere, whether it's on Twitter or on the forum posts. Like, unless you just hate Dora Hacks and Trevor, be constructive. I think that's a tip I'd like to give everyone throughout Web3 all the time. Like, just because you aren't a fan of something doesn't mean you couldn't help improve it by illustrating why you aren't a fan of it, rather than just being a futter. Across the board, applies to everything.
Mm-hmm. I like the passionate people that get up in your face and tell you you're wrong.
Yeah.
And disagree, because what I've found in any teams that have this in their community listening, what I've found is the people that show up every day and are a pain in your ass and are mean to you and yell and disagree, they probably agree with like 99.5% of what you're saying, but they're really passionate about that fraction of a percent that you're obviously on the other side of. And that person is your best employee. That person is your best community member, community manager, whatever. And if you can kind of reconcile that and make that bridge that divide, you get some really incredible stuff and you probably improve your product. So get loud if you're serious about it, I suppose, one way or another.
Awesome. And I think, Trev pinned above, or Nena did, thank you. We have some links to that, so you can go check it out and read some of the details. There's a TLDR as well as a more in-depth breakdown. Get out and vote, as always. Plus, as we've seen in past, voting can also sometimes help you get airdrops. So if for no other reason than that, participate. But hopefully you have other reasons.
Doing an airdrop to people that vote?
Wait, say again?
Is Spark doing an airdrop to people that vote?
No, we didn't mean to imply anything like that. But in general, I think we've seen a couple airdrops throughout Cosmos that are weighted based on vote participation.
I'm just joking.
I know.
But happy to talk about the governance proposal. You know, it's really important that people engage. If you consider yourself a cosmonaut, like in one way or another, like you need to care about the future of Cosmos. And this is a big step in the right direction.
I think actually what I'm able to do, Dan, I know you have to go soonish, and I do want to give you a quick chance to give some 42 updates and kind of touch on stuff there. So maybe we knock that out real quick, and then I can stay on a little bit longer if we want to talk a little bit more about the GovProp and bring anyone from the audience on stage who has questions about it. Does that make sense? Maybe we'll, because I know you got to run.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I do have another meeting now. But I think this has been a very interesting space. I think, and I know it's called Building in Cosmos, and that was sort of what we started discussing with Trev. And then I think I actually asked the user experience question and sort of took it all off track. So I'm sorry about that. But definitely would be more interested in hearing why Dora has chosen to invest in like frontier techs like space, but also in Cosmos. But I guess you did allude to that to a large degree, Trev. But super fascinating insights. On the 42 side, we are finally completed with our new entity registration, which is pretty cool. So just moving some things around from a legal perspective. And then we're ready to go live. So Nena, who's heading up our sort of growth and marketing communications, will be making an announcement on that shortly, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, who knows. But yeah, very exciting stuff on the 42 front. And I think that's been the big thing for the team recently. Like, and Trev, as you mentioned, we have only learned so much through speaking to our initial sort of early beta DeFi users, but nothing is going to make us learn more when this product is out in the market and we can actually get on the call or get real live feedback from real users. So I think we're all as a team extremely excited for that next phase of development.
Awesome. And what's the best way for people to get involved at the moment? And obviously give us a follow on Twitter, hit that bell icon. What else?
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. Sign up to our beta whitelist on our website so we can start approving users. But yeah, probably Twitter is best to just follow through for updates.
Cool.
But I'm going to jump. But thank you very much, everyone, for the space. I'll leave it. I'll hand it over to Nena. Peace.
Have a good one, Daniel. Thanks so much. Yeah, Nena, do you have something you want to dive into? Otherwise, we could maybe circle back.
Yeah. I was just going to say that if anyone has a question, you can always reach out to us directly or just send us a DM through Twitter. We're super happy to answer your questions and to get in touch with you.
Yeah, well put. Super community-oriented team. Fast to reply, fast to answer questions, love all feedback. So help us make the best product possible. Okay, cool. So I don't know how long you have, Trev, but I can go to the top of the hour if we want to maybe dive into this prop a little more and how you see it benefiting Cosmos in sort of the big picture.
Sure. I think it's fairly straightforward. We did cover quite a bit of it, but like if anybody has questions or doesn't kind of understand why it's important to engage, like maybe we can field some stuff out if there's anything specific. More than happy to see.
I somewhat know the answer, but I'll play devil's advocate a bit because it was my first impression. So maybe let's just explain at a high level. It seems like you guys are asking for money to help fund projects, community endeavors, infrastructure, that sort of thing, which is exactly what the AA DAO does. And in your form, you know, you say you're actually working with them for this. Maybe just some clarity on how you guys are involved, why they aren't just handling it in its entirety. Is there cooperation going on? Some people might see it as some redundancy. So maybe let's just start there. So like, how do you and AA DAO work together or in conjunction for what seems on the surface to be the same sort of goal?
Yeah, I'd start by saying that I understand like why it might seem very, very similar. AA has their own mandate and have been around for a bit. And have been funded to also accelerate a lot of the things in Cosmos. What we have with quadratic funding and voting is we allow the community to engage. And we've seen this with our initiatives on Archway and Injective and in other ecosystems, where the community is able to help decide where the money is going. And I think that that's really, really important. That's something that has been missing. When you think about governance in a nutshell, it takes a lot of, as you can see, if you read the proposal, it takes a lot of time, energy, due diligence, and a lot of, honestly, networking and understanding the ecosystem at the highest level in order to get anything remotely close to passing or to even consider building a governance proposal. For a small, like, non-revenue driven project that's contributing to the ecosystem, I'll use the Rollup Co. as an example. They build content. They're not here to make a metric ton of money. They're here to benefit the entire ecosystem and to help make sure people understand what they're doing, to make educated decisions, to understand you know, this application or another application without needing to be like, you know, a Web3 full stack, you know, developer. And having been in Cosmos for like since its inception, you know, we need to kind of bridge that barrier to the users and to the people. I guess I'm getting a little bit off track here talking about education. Education is one component of it. Like that was one of the, I think that was the only non-technical project that was funded by our last QF round. And outside of that, there's a lot of infrastructure that works in the middle. And open source dev tooling and a lot of things that are not purely revenue driven where you would raise a bunch of money off of it. But as a public good, it benefits everybody, right? So who's funding those projects? You know, no one's going to go and have to, you know, submit a gov proposal and go through all of that just to be rejected, right? It's or go through all that due diligence and effort and like, you know, for like a 10K grant, right? I think what it allows us to do is be a little bit more agile on the ground and to get a lot of these teams that really want to put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into Cosmos and have, and to make sure that, you know, they're alive, kicking and able to help everybody because they want to, right?
Actually, here's a question. What's the smallest like funding you guys have provided in past and that you may plan to do with this round? Like, because I think that's a really strong point. I've been in that situation before where when I was very first starting being more than just a user, just needed like a little bit of, you know, capital, kickstart cash from somewhere, but like so little that it didn't make sense to go through like a big gov prop on chain and have everyone vote and that sort of thing. So what sort of sizes are you guys working with? I know it's quite a big range, but.
In the past, the way we've done it is it's been a matching pool. As an example, I'll use the QF round for. We did an AZ QF round just broadly for Cosmos and put up $50,000 of our own money, by the way, and ran it ourselves, right? And we gave it to eight or nine, 10 different projects, and it ranged from, you know, two, 300 Atom, you know, all the way up to, I forget what the upper limit was or the upper threshold was. But the way we have it set up currently is in a matching pool. It's directly proportional or proportional in some way to the amount of contributions and votes by the community, which is where the community voice comes in, right? So it can be it can be really small or it can be a lot. It depends on what the community cares about and believes is important, which I think is a really powerful thing for quadratic funding and voting. It engages the community, right?
Yeah. Nana, I'm curious, have you ever been on either side of this process before, looking for funding or helping to distribute it?
Well, I was back in the beautiful days of Terra, we actually had a very, very vivid governance. And I was one of the most active members, I would say, Trevor same. So that's why we care a lot about governance. I mean, I'm a lawyer. So in general, like, all these processes and actually like getting to understand how to communicate properly with the community and the teams it's very important. I have helped multiple projects to put proposals that have gone anywhere between like 50K to 1.5 million. It's a complicated process. It's also a very politic process and it's important. At the end, you know, like you get a lot of feedback from the community if it's done correctly, but also like in proposals like this one, I feel that it's important that something like this happens, because you are not only getting the opinion of users and what they want, but also if they support your proposal, you are also getting more like users or audience for that specific project. Yeah. And you are building a strong community in general. And that's something that doesn't happen much right now in Cosmos, and that is needed. So for me, like as soon as I saw it, that was one of my questions. Like, how is the community going to be involved in all of this? Because I know that Dora cares a lot about that. But also it was, what is like the role of Dora? Like, are you guys going to bet maybe a little bit the projects and stuff? Because they also have the experience. I mean, they're VCs too, and they have invested in a lot of projects across Cosmos. So they know Cosmos much better than most of people, definitely much better than most VCs. So yeah, it just makes sense for me in general.
Yeah, I'll build off that actually. And Trevor, a question for you that, you know, hope this space is being recorded. Hopefully this will help some teams out. If I'm a small team, a startup, whether it's individual or a couple people, what are some tips that you have for getting funding and applying? Because, and a little context here, Web3 is tough because obviously there's lots of scams. There's also lots of products that try their best but just fail. And so I've always thought about, you know, back when like Spark was my big focus, and just in general with all funding out there, always think like this is a pretty hard thing to do, because there are certain times where you just have to sort of take a gamble. You're not sure, a project's too young. It may not pan out. They may have the best intentions, flop, but then community may criticize you for, you know, oh, you funded something that was a scam or a flop. Even if it wasn't a scam, it just didn't work out. So there is this sort of difficulty, I think. And the way you guys are doing, where you let the community have input, is I think a big part of the solution. But just with that thought in context, any tips for people, small projects, individuals or small teams trying to get funding, and how they should go about communicating what they're doing, interacting with the community and or teams like Dora, that sort of thing? Very broad question, but I think it could help a lot of people.
We could be here all day.
Okay, yeah. maybe the top one or two off the top of your head. Yeah.
Well, let me cover a couple of things you touched on. The first one is in terms of the QF vetting process. Like, we do an initial screening to make sure there aren't bullshit projects that make it through. That's number one, right? So there's an initial due diligence layer. And the second due diligence layer, I suppose, in QF is the community's ability to suss it out, which, as we know, we love sussing stuff out, don't we? Everybody's a sleuth of some kind. Everybody knows how to use an explorer. A lot of people do at this point in time. But it's kind of part of it, right? It's kind of part of being engaged. It's also caring about where that money is going. Because, I mean, that's community money, right? We should care where that's going, right? And speak up if it doesn't make any sense, right? In terms of funding and everything, the current landscape, it's changed a little bit. If you're in narrative, you know, good luck. You know, you throw a bunch of buzzwords in there. You know, you might get lucky and raise off of a deck or something like that, or a proof of concept, something like that. But there's, you know, the way I think about it is traction is king. Real traction is king. And I'm not talking about Twitter users. I'm not talking about, or followers. I'm not talking about people in your Discord. I'm talking about daily active and monthly active users. If you build a pre-MVP or MVP and people are using it, that's interesting to me. If it's conceptual and, you know, based on who you know, I'm like, that doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, it means a little bit to me, but like, it's, are you doing anything meaningful? Do you solve a problem? Do you have traction? And this is speaking personally, right? It's, and I'm not speaking specifically for the team. This is just kind of like what I kind of think about. An idea is an idea. Plenty of ideas out there. Yeah.
Well put. An idea is an idea. And there's plenty of ideas out there. It's funny. It sounds vague, but fits Web3 perfectly.
I miss Web2 as well. It's everywhere. Like, how many people Yeah, you can raise your hand whether here or in person. You know, we're in college one day, drinking a beer or smoking a whatever, and you're like, I had a $1 million idea, and you saw somebody else do it like 10 years later. Well, they did it. You know,
that's funny. That's right in line with something completely unrelated I saw this morning, which was someone replying on Twitter to one of those videos of someone went to an art show or museum, and all the art was modern art, just like a solid color on a canvas, like nothing else. And the caption to that video was, visiting $1 million art I could make myself. But someone had replied to it and said, yeah, but the difference is you didn't. Anyone could have made that, but the artist is the one that did. And that means far more than you'd think. And it's kind of the same here. Well, it's the same everywhere. Web 2, Web 3, just like you're saying, yeah.
There's companies that have overnight successes. They raise a metric, you know, fuck ton of money, 300 million, 200 million, whatever, or they launch an application and they have suddenly have a ton of users and people go, oh, that was an overnight success. No, they had like 4, 5, 30 years of massive failures, and then they had a day of success. That's it. That's the ball game. We need to think about it that way.
Yeah. And that just goes back to one of the oldest pieces of advice, which is stick to it, right? Don't get discouraged. Keep trying. Not everything's going to be a success, but so long as your motivations and heart are in the right place and you're tackling it with other smart people with similar motivations, hard work pays off in due time. Yeah.
If you're an early stage project and you don't have a thing built and you're not like really anything yet, like I'd rather have you go and just talk about your ideas on Twitter until you have a solid team rather than trying to raise money and to recruit a team. You know?
Yeah. That's funny you say that. So that is what created Interchain Info, actually. I talked about Interchain Info in Twitter spaces as an idea until one day the man behind the Airdrops One account reached out to me and was like, I love this idea. And looking back on it, as opposed to going out and trying to find a business partner for it, rather letting them come to me because the idea excited them as well, infinitely better. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, and honestly, this is a big failure of a lot of founders and a lot of builders, is that they stop doing that the second they have a team. They stop doing it the second that they've deployed something and that they have users, and they turn to just building, which is, you know, building is important, but also like, you can't really forget how you got there, right? You need to be about it all the time, every day, all day, if you're in a startup, because like this shit is hard and you're probably going to fail. So you got to go both feet in. So hot take here, any founder who talks about work-life balance is like almost a no for me, which it sounds bad saying that, but like also like you have to.
I got to push back on that I've given myself epilepsy due to not having a good work-life balance, and I'm serious in that. So I got to push back a little. Message to all the founders out there, take care of yourself. Like,
all right, take care of yourself a little bit.
A little bit, exactly. Find that balance.
But it's true.
It's different than a normal job. If you're wanting people to trust you with funds, their time, their whatever it is, you got to be pedal to the metal, for sure.
And everybody needs to be bought in. That's heavy salary equity split on the equity side. If you're paying people, like, you're doing something wrong. I mean, not paying people, but like if you're
depends
paying people,
on the position,
like, all cash, like.
But yeah,
I got question marks for you.
No, it's true. Like, and it makes sense too, right? Like, financially, it probably makes sense for a small team to be paying in like equity as opposed to liquid assets. But B, it just creates that, you know, the people on your team are not just there for a paycheck. Their paycheck relies on the product itself succeeding. So just even more motivation, more aligning of interests, that sort of thing.
Yeah, 100%. And I want to go back because to me, this is really important. It may seem unimportant to a lot of people listening or listening later, but like talking about and being about it is like, you need to not just do it externally. You need to also do it internally, because you sold your team. That's why they're here. You sold your users. That's why they're here. But like, you need to keep selling them or they leave.
Yep. Especially in Web3, actually, with how fast everything evolves, whether it's competition, something that
just everything just moves so quick. Yeah, there is no, you can never rest on your laurels. Even if you think you've had a successful launch and start, that can all go away within months if you don't maintain it properly. And also, sorry, Nen, I've seen your hand for a minute. Take it away.
No, it's fun. I'm so happy to have this conversation in general, because I agree with both of you. Like, I mean, I think the three of us have been burnt out in some moment, multiple times maybe. So it is important to take care of yourself and to know your limits. However, I do agree that even when you know your limits and you try to take care of yourself, like, for example, I exercise every single day. If I don't do that, I'm going to have like a stroke because, one, I have too much caffeine, and two, I need to be moving, and that just helps with my nerves in general. So I do take care of myself and I try to sleep like the minimum. However, my mind is all the time thinking about my project. And that's normal. Like, you have to breathe your project because you have to really believe it. And that's what inspires people to follow you and to invest also. Like, at least for the good projects. And is you see this person and you say, like, I don't even know if that's possible, but that person is so determined and like so sure about that you kind of want to see that succeed and see that happening. Yeah. So it is a hard balance, but it is needed.
I also think, despite competition, FUD, all this stuff, deep down, pretty much everyone in this space has a sense of like, we're in this together to try and make crypto into something that changes the world. And so when you see someone trying their hardest, even if you don't believe with all the nuances, a little part of you roots for them, for sure. At least that's how my mind works.
I mean, that's how we survived this long. We're just stupid animals, right?
Totally.
And there's things that are much faster than us, stronger than us, arguably smarter than us, that would kill us if we didn't figure out how to come together and use tools and have a social, you know, have a social structure and collaborate to build things, right? And that's about it. This is no different. Going back to we're no different than we've always been. We need to work together.
I think that's a beautiful note to end on. I mean, what more important in crypto of all places, at Cosmos especially, we have to learn to work together. The amount of comments and commentary and conversations I see on some aspect of that being Cosmos's single biggest downside, just this sort of fracturing, whether it's the fracturing of liquidity, communities, developers, whatever it may be, that's going to naturally happen with how Cosmos is set up, lots of different chains, but we can overcome a good bit of that through just collaboration, supporting, and just in general. Yeah, I'm being redundant now. Peace, praise and, you know, friendship, hug, love, all that stuff. Little bit of healthy competition, always needed, but Cosmos is interesting, and is one reason I was excited to chat with you guys at Dora, because you're one of the teams that is constantly sort of working to bring things together, to be chain agnostic in your efforts, community agnostic, and just advance the concept of Cosmos and Web3 as a whole. So thanks so much for joining, Trev. And then I don't know if you have any closing thoughts, but I think this is a pretty good space or place to spin this down.
Yeah, just thank you for coming, Trev. Thank you for also working so hard. You work like a founder. so thank you. Thank you for always like bringing people together and for believing in people in general. So thank you for that. Wishing you the best with this governance proposal. And it is a pleasure, as always, to be in a space with you guys.
Thanks a lot. I think we have to be optimistic, cautiously optimistic. Otherwise, what's the point in anything? Right. So thanks for having me. And yeah, anytime. More than happy to join.
Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for joining. Final reminder, go vote on the prop on Chain on the Hub. What number was it again, Trev? Not people will be able to tell by the title.
It's prop 917 AECQF. And we actually just had a couple big votes come in. We're at 37% or 40%.
Awesome. Cool. And I'm not telling you to vote yes on it. I'm telling you to go vote. So read it, see what you think. If you want to vote no, leave some reasoning somewhere. But I'll be voting yes. I've seen Dora do good stuff in the past. I've seen AADAO do good stuff with us and others. So again, thanks for the time, Trev. Everybody check out the prop on chain, and we'll catch you next week. Have a good one, everybody.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken knives. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds, fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place, smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines, they call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community, all these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10 stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Channel Spaces.